Good afternoon, everybody. We're striving now in this work for something slightly different than a knowledge of truth. Everything we're doing now is geared to the experience of the presence of God, which is the source of all truth that we can ever know. Now, if you have been slow in your progress, if you find that you're still in a state of worry at times, or fear, or bad health, if there are problems, be sure this is normal. There's no one so unusual that he or she is without them, and all of us become impatient. This is all very normal. But now, spirit plays a trick on us. It says, yes, you've gone through many things in your pathway to truth, and they were necessary. And you even come to a place where you think you know truth. And then Spirit says to us, the only reason you had to get to the place where you think you know truth is so you could just begin to glimpse what God already knows. There is nothing you have learned on the way, not one single stitch, that God does not already know. And therefore, as you begin to feel that entrance into the third degree, you discover that you're not told to know no truth whatsoever. God already knows it. What's the point of you duplicating God? Are you a different self than God? Are you unwilling to rest back and say, Father, you know? And so the real dying to self begins at a point where you can say to yourself, I have nothing. I am nothing. And this will not come to an individual who has not been touched by the presence in some way, so that the individual feels the vision, the courage, the ultimate possibility is only there when the Spirit of God itself is accepted as the presence, the life, and the identity of your own being. You cannot want to know truth with your mind and still accept spiritual identity. For one belies the other. Now, in our way to discovering our own inadequacies, one of our major problems has been that we have relied upon human wisdom. There was always my finger in the pie. And in so doing, we had used the mind not as an instrument to receive the Father, but as a thinking, creative, even worrying mind, a mind that was going to find solutions. And we discover that trap, that mind which wants to find solutions, is not your mind. Now, every one of us who comes to the point where we're willing to give up our mental knowledge of truth receives what may be called an anointing. That anointing is shown to us in the Bible in many unusual ways, and it contains in itself probably one of the greatest secrets of illumination. You see it in a scene where a woman, not identified in Matthew, a sinner, comes and pours this oil over the Master from an alabaster vase. And you see it again in John, where this next pouring of oil from an alabaster vase is from a different woman, perhaps, one who now is identified as Mary. We find Judas objecting, because this is expensive oil. But the Master says, no, the poor you always have with you, but I will not always be with you. We find in this a secret teaching, a teaching that perhaps goes way back to Zechariah in the Old Testament. In fact, it's interwoven throughout the Old Testament wherever you find the name of oil spoken in some subtle way, like an olive tree. The olive tree symbolizing olive oil, and oil symbolizing this secret. We're going to look at Zechariah. We see that he, ordained by the Spirit, is aware that within the invisible lies the self, which is the self of all men. And to convey this to us, he uses the symbols which later appeared in Revelation. The angel that talked with me came again and walked and waked me as a man that is wakened out of his sleep. This is Zechariah, fourth chapter. The complete fourth chapter is the secret of the oil. He said unto me, what seest thou? I said, I've looked, and behold, a candlestick of gold, with a bowl on the top of it, seven lamps thereon, seven pipes up to the lamps, which are upon the top thereof, and two olive trees by it, one upon the right side of the bowl, the other upon the left side thereof. So I answered and spake to the angel that talked with me, saying, what are these, my Lord? And then the angel that talked with me answered and said unto me, knowest thou not what these be? And I said, no, my Lord. Then he spake and said, this is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel, saying, not by might, not by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. Not might, not power, but by my spirit. But what? What not by might? What not by power? What by my spirit? And a further clue. I answered again and said unto him, but what be these two olive branches which through the two golden pipes empty the golden oil out of themselves? And he answered me and said, knowest thou not what these be? And I said, no, my Lord. And then he said, these are the two anointed ones that stand by the Lord of the whole earth. The two anointed ones that stand by the Lord of the whole earth. And therein is our clue to what we are striving to do. Our subject is oil, the symbol of something else. Wherever you have found a problem, you have lacked that oil. Wherever some inner substance has come to dissolve the problem, it has been that oil. But hit or miss, getting it by random, by accident, has to be substituted now by knowing where the oil is, what it is, and how you open the soul center to let it flow. We see a flower. We know the oil of the flower becomes our perfumes. We know one little tincture of it is powerful. Just think of a tincture of divine oil. And what a tincture of divine oil received in consciousness does to release an individual from every pressing problem. Then go a step further and see that the oil, being spiritual substance, is here presented as one of the deepest mystical secrets. The oil is the spiritual substance which forms the body of the soul. All progress in the path to absolute illumination is for the purpose of attaining that spiritual body which is independent of the material world. And because this attainment is the destiny of every individual, regardless of the level of consciousness they entertain at the moment, only the highest initiates are even aware that divine oil becomes their spiritual body, their incorporeal self attained and realized and lived in. And so in our first and second degrees, we were more concerned with other things. In our first degree, all we wanted to do was be a good human being. And after we got that far, we began to take the mind and open it up, letting it become an instrument for the Father, an instrument for the divine mind. And always in these progressions, we discovered that we were being made more comfortable, happier, more harmonious with all those around us. And we were learning pet phrases which we thought we could hide behind at times, as a sort of an armor against the world. We could smile while other people suffered and say, if they only knew the truth that I know, if I could only tell them. But now in your third degree, you come to a place where the Spirit demands more of you. Whereas before you wanted to build your humanhood, and you enjoyed the experience of opening the mind to the invisible, now you are told all that must go, that the oil of the incorporeal body, that oil which forms the substance of your eternal body, can never flow into a human being. To be awake to Christ and dead to self becomes the way in which the soul center opens to express the divine oil, which takes us into the transitional experience. And so our two olive branches, our two olive trees, which are the two witnesses of the Father on earth, become the sentinels which we must pass through in order to receive the oil. And dying to self, in order to become alive to omnipresence, becomes the single-minded dedication of all of our time and thought. Our whole heart and our whole soul is bent in the direction of releasing that divine oil, which makes the divine body, our living experience. Now let's look at this woman who comes to anoint the Master. We find her in several places. We find her in Matthew in the 26th chapter. It came to pass when Jesus had finished all these sayings, he said unto his disciples, "Ye know that after 2 days is the feast of the Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed to be crucified. And then assembled together the chief priests and scribes and the elders of the people unto the palace of the high priest called Caiaphas, and consulted that they might take Jesus by subtlety and kill him. But they said, No, not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar among the people." Now he knew in 2 days there would be a Passover and he would be betrayed to be crucified. We know now what they didn't know then, that he already had attained the soul body. And that's why he could speak so evenly about crucifixion. Now, when Jesus was in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, there came upon him a woman having an alabaster box, a very precious ointment, poured it on his head as he sat at meat. Now, alabaster, the whiteness, the box is actually the vase, and it's a symbol of the soul. And so pouring this ointment over the Master, she was saying to him and to us, she was expressing outwardly her inner consciousness. She was telling him she had come into the experience of the incorporeal body of the soul. Inasmuch as the woman in other parts is described as a sinner, we may assume this was the adulteress Mary, Mary of Magdala, for the moment. But when his disciples saw it, they had indignation, saying, "To what purpose is this waste?" His disciples said, "To what purpose is this waste?" They had no knowledge of the meaning of the alabaster vase and the oil she was pouring. But you see, she couldn't help herself. That which is your consciousness must externalize. And having attained the inner body, she showed it forth as the pouring of oil upon him. He, though, was the Christ. She was revealing that the Christ of her being was pouring oil within her, that she had gone through the first, second, and third degrees that we are going through. She had died to personal self. She was no longer a human being. She was not mortal. She walked in what appeared to be a form, but she was not in time and space. Her life was lived external to her body. She knew the meaning of omnipresent spirit. The disciples did not. They said, "Why all the waste? That cost 300 pence. We could be giving that money to the poor." You see, the disciples were not the highest in ordainment at that time. Lazarus was higher. This ointment might have been sold for much, given to the poor. And when Jesus understood it, he said unto them, "Why trouble ye the woman? She hath wrought a good work upon me. For ye have the poor always with you, but me ye have not always. For in that she hath poured this ointment on my body, she did it for my burial. Having attained the soul body, she understood that he was in the soul body. She was aware he would walk through death. All of this secret conversation, unknown to the readers of the Bible, who merely see a woman pouring oil. Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached in the whole world, there shall also be this, that this woman hath done, be told for a memorial of her. Mary of Magdala was the second highest initiate, right under Mary, the mother of Jesus. Now, the understanding of this changes when we go to the Gospel of John. This is the outer event. John, ever the symbolist, the esotericist, takes us even deeper. And you wonder if they are speaking about the identical incidents, because here it said, you know that Passover will be in 2 days, and then we come to John in the 12th chapter, and we find it said this way. Then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. If you've wondered about Lazarus, what happened to him, well, here he is again. And there they made him a supper, and Martha served. But Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. We have Jesus, the invisible Christ, appearing as Jesus. And now we have the invisible Christ appearing as Lazarus, both having supper with Martha and Mary. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus, wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Then saith one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? Now we have the odor, the fragrance of the ointment introduced. And this is because in the soul body, we are told there is a different fragrance. Some of you have noticed in deep meditation that you're aware of fragrance. You may be aware of your own body of the soul. Now Mary, the sister of Lazarus, is identified as having the body of the soul. We find here, through John's very significant purpose, an interesting revelation, not only about this body, but about the resurrection of Lazarus. You recall that he had been buried 4 days, and the purpose, or at least one of the purposes, was to show that after 3 days, the soul does not leave the body. In other words, the body and the soul are not conjoined. The soul is completely independent of the body at all times. But now we see that Lazarus represents something. This was not only the resurrection of the man called Lazarus. Lazarus was dead for 4 days, meaning he was D-E-A-D, dead. Totally dead. And the point here that John wishes us to know is that you cannot awaken to Christ until you are totally dead to self. The 4 days represent the total human deadness of Lazarus. And unless we are prepared not to hold out a remnant of humanhood, that soul body which walks out of the tomb of mortality is not formed. And strangely, that's only part of it. And that's why Mary had to pour the oil. You see, Mary and Lazarus constitute the inner and the outer, the male and the female, the higher and the lower. And in each of us, Mary and Lazarus must be redeemed. The positive and the negative, the higher and the lower, the inner and the outer must be redeemed. Lazarus represents the elder son who stayed home. Mary represents the younger son who wasted his substance going out into the far country. And they both represent the inner self of Jesus, showing that the male and the female elements had been redeemed into oneness. The soul body was completed, and at this point where Mary, the sister of Lazarus, reveals that she too has become aware of and is living in her soul body, indicated by the fragrance of it and the oil. This is the preparation, of course, for the triumphal entry into Jerusalem. For it is the marriage of these two, which is the mystical marriage. Now we're in a place where the human mind is of no value. There's nothing it can do for you. It has to surrender. You reach that place where this human mind, which would observe, which would sort out the facts and catalog them, which would make inferences, has no capacity to entertain the living Christ. It's as if in your mind at the moment you have certain knowledge. Now, if your mind were also able to have the knowledge that is, let's say, in the mind of a scientist, you would have your mind's knowledge and his mind's knowledge, and you would have the knowledge of both minds. But his mind doesn't contain all knowledge, and so if you took another individual's mind and had the three minds, you would have a wider basis of knowledge. And you could go on and on like that. But you reach the place where all of the addition of human minds still cannot give you spiritual awareness. And you have to come to the place above the mind, where this mind is looking up at the divine mind and saying, "This is as far as I can go. I have to turn to you. I have to relax my mental attitudes, my mental probing. I have to come to that place now where I do absolutely nothing, simply look up to the face of the Father and wait. Because my mind does not have the capacity to experience omnipresence." You simply can't encompass omnipresence with a human mind. And even though you know the meaning of the word, can define it, can talk about it, and probably make a good case about understanding it, you find that you have not accepted omnipresence. The human mind cannot accept omnipresence. And to give you an idea of why not, let's say you go into a cave, and it's dark, and now what you're doing in the cave constitutes the allness of your human selfhood. You're only concerned about what you're doing there. You're not concerned about anything else. Now, when you go into your physical senses, it's the same way. You're only concerned about what's happening within your physical senses. That's your cave. Your mind is your cave. You're only concerned about what's happening in your mind. And when you, with that mind, try to reach beyond your mind, there's no place to reach. And you find that you have been relying on your own human wisdom to find out things. And as a consequence, to you, omnipresence means one thing. To someone else's mind, it means another. And every human mind will tell you a different meaning of omnipresence. But no human mind will tell you that you are omnipresence, that your identity is omnipresence, and that the acceptance of omnipresence can never be made with a human mind. In fact, the acceptance can only be made when the human mind, which knows not the meaning of omnipresence, has been rolled away. For when you have accepted omnipresence, you're in a very startling universe. The things you understand would be quite shocking to the individual you were before omnipresence was your understanding. You would discover, perhaps, that omnipresence takes you right from this instant here, straight through your complete human past, mineral past, vegetable past, animal past, through every material past, through every incarnation, straight to the doorway of God, without interruption. Right from God to this instant is omnipresence, and that is you. The one continuous, uninterrupted life of spirit. And if you look back on that one uninterrupted line of spiritual life, it has no form in a corporeal world. And so the acceptance of omnipresence eliminates all that you have called your human past in all incarnations. It eliminates mother, father, brother, sister. It eliminates all your human attainments. It eliminates all your human possessions. It also eliminates all your human fears, doubts, and worries. Omnipresence says, Spirit is, Spirit I am. And Spirit being all, there is no other self. The mother who birthed me was myself. How could there be a second self there to birth me? If I am spirit and mother was spirit and one self is spirit, was there a mother? Was there a son? Or was there not just one self being self, appearing outwardly as two? And then you're coming into your third degree of accepting omnipresence as yourself. Realizing that omnipresence will do nothing of itself unless it's recognized, just as if a pencil were not going to get up and write, you'd have to pick it up and know it's a pencil and that it can write. You then begin to recognize omnipresence, accept it, live in it, rejecting all else that is not omnipresence. And you find the oil is pouring. The oil is forming that invisible body. the transmutation from physical sense to spiritual awareness is coming through as a new body, a body that Mary here was showing the Master she had. For you have found the two olive trees, spirit and its companion, truth. The two, divine truth and divine spirit, made one in you, produce the oil. The oil produces the body of the soul. The body of the soul is recognized as the one infinite body, and in your third degree, you rest in the quiet, conscious realization that the body of the soul is the only body I am. It knows no pain. It knows no lack. It knows no limitation. It knows no need. And therefore, when I express a lack, a need, a limitation, I am rejecting my body. I am rejecting omnipresence, even though my mind had known the word and had been able to pronounce it and speak about it. Omnipresence eliminates all that is not the Spirit of God as reality. In your third degree, omnipresence is the law of your being, the nature of your being, and the activity of your being. And therefore, you are not living then in a physical form. Your life doesn't consist of the activity of that physical form. You have an external existence to the body, made possible only because the soul center opening up yields the oil, which becomes your spiritual discernment, your spiritual consciousness, your capacity to trust the invisible. Now, the reason the Bible tells us about Mary doing this and Lazarus is for the faint-hearted, who say, oh, Jesus did it. But of course he did it. Who else is Jesus? The more you study the Bible, the more you discover that many people did it. And that we are doing it. But not with, as Joel puts it, our spare time and our spare change. No, he says, only when all of you is dedicated to that which is greater than your human self. The anointing, the oil, carries with it the ordainment. Carries with it the will, the power, the self-fulfillment. And we find now we're becoming aware of our invisible bodies. We're learning to rest back, accepting not only is the outer body the temporary, fleeting image, but there is an inner body of light that is real. We know it will not come forth without our recognition of it. We begin to rest in it consciously, letting the government of the Father do its own work. In the third degree, your patience is deepened. You're willing to go through long periods of seemingly outer inactivity. You're letting that divine seed take root. You know that all of the frantic outer activity has nothing to do with the root of the seed. And just like a seed in the ground, you're letting it take root in the invisible infinite. You do it consciously, quietly. You meditate not with the purpose of attaining something or receiving something, but just to know quietly, as I do this, the root of my Christhood is becoming deeper and more firmly entrenched into my consciousness. I simply rest in that knowledge, knowing this is how my confidence in omnipresence is strengthened. You merely rest, knowing that this is the way for the soul center to open, to lead you to a mystical realm above human consciousness. Not to receive something, but to be opened to that inner vision to be taken out of all the psychic realms, the emotional realms, the mental realms. We are fasting from personality, fasting from the mind that wants to know, fasting from everything that will not give us that precious oil, the oil that ordains us, the oil of the divine sun. In this way, we are preparing the way for the ultimate initiation. Quietly resting, seeking nothing, but feeling the knitting within of being itself, accepting the Spirit of God as your invisible body, and letting the divine mind act upon that Spirit to animate it, motivate it, guide it, direct it, feed it, sustain it, clothe it, completely trusting that invisible body to be maintained by the invisible Father. Not seeking even outer signs, resting in the Word. That is the eye of your being and the me out here with its worries, its problems, its doubts, its needs, its limitations. This me is revealed to you as a false side of yourself, without meaning, without existence. And the more you are aware of this invisible soul self, the more you know that any clinging to the outer man is a denial of the inner self. Once you reject the inner self by being concerned about the outer self, you are denying the allness of God. You are a prodigal from omnipresence. You are outside of your own identity. And now all we're concerned about is being true to ourselves. Every worry is faced with the knowledge that I can only be worrying about a me that doesn't exist, because my name is omnipresence. My name is Spirit. I go back to the Father all the way. I go all the way ahead to the Father, all the way up and down and around to the Father. Wherever the Father is, I am with him. Spirit is my name. The only body I have is made of pure spirit. There is no other substance. And as your inner integrity deepens, increases, it multiplies the oil. It multiplies the final moment when the robe, that inner garment of the soul, is bestowed upon you, signifying your soul body is now ready for you to live in, independent of all karmic law. You've earned your spurs. You can walk with Mary, with Lazarus, with all those who have gone through the crucifixion of self to the inner resurrection to the ascension over material law. You're ready to make your triumphal entry into selfhood. The reason patience is stressed is because in the earlier degrees there were signs following. Always there were signs. In the inner realm, there are no more signs following. There is only the acceptance and the realization that that very presence that you were seeking is your name. You no longer are seeking the presence of God. That presence you are. It is the fact of your being. And that is what is meant by moving, living, having your being in God. You move as the presence, you live as the presence, you have your being as the presence. And you deny not the presence because it is omnipresent. What if you do not hold this 24 hours a day? If you hold it for 3 minutes a day, the oil pours. And that oil increases your capacity to hold this consciousness again and again and again. And so the key word today is omnipresence is meaningless unless I consciously recognize omnipresence. Not as a word, but as God, active, not passive. And now watch this. God is active. If you're not doing what God is doing, what are you doing? If God is all, what can you possibly do that has any meaning if it's not what God is doing? And so the activity of God functioning as your soul body is the only way in which you can be doing what God is doing. And that is why you must find that great capacity to release all that is not your invisible soul body, to live in it, because it alone is acting in the will of God. It is the living expression of God where you stand. The activity of God in your soul body is what Jesus was talking about when he said, "The Father worketh and I work hitherto." Thou seest me, thou seest the Father. He had come out of the dual sense of life, out of the fleshly sense of life, into the soul body, which is the activity of God, as we will do. Then I and the Father are one activity. The mind of the Father becomes the activity of my soul body. And what I do is because the Father is doing it. And so you find God is living God's life as your soul body. I live, yet not I, Christ liveth my life. This is the soul body activity. And until you are in the conscious awareness of that body through the realization and the conscious practice that spirit is all, spirit is your name, spirit is omnipresent, and therefore omnipresence is your name, you will still be finding fractions, and patches, and flaws in your life, whereas these fractions, patches, and flaws are not your life at all. Your life is omnipresence. Spirit, everywhere, being itself, is your life. And the experience of going all the way back in time, through space, and then out of time and out of space to the throne of God to establish in consciousness the continuity of your life, and then to not leave that conscious continuity, gives you a foundation which enables you not to deny who you are, and not to be concerned about where you are in the physical form or what you are doing in the physical form, because all that can be happening is the activity, invisible, of omnipresence. Your conscious knowledge of that brings that invisible activity into visible manifestation as the fruits of spirit. If you are not wherever God is, you are not omnipresent spirit. If you are not omnipresent spirit, what are you? Grass. Nothing. And so we don't wait to discover that we're grass, that we're nothing. We accept that now. This human selfhood is laid aside in the third degree, and in order to find that resurrection experience of Lazarus, which is rebirth, I go through what may be called the ascension without crucifixion. While in the form, while appearing mortal, while living in a mortal existence, the transmutation of consciousness, the conscious awareness that the oil flows when I accept spirit as my identity, when I pursue that identity to see that it is everywhere, it is omnipresent, it is I, then I learn to rest in that and behold the power of my omnipresent self. Behold how self-supporting omnipresence is. Only in our fidelity to omnipresent self, as yourself, myself, his self, and there being no other self, only then are we totally dying, as was demonstrated through the so-called death and resurrection of Lazarus. This is an inner activity of yourself. It was this dying and rebirth, which all had been completed before Jesus began his ministry. What we saw were only the outer physical crucifixion, the outer physical resurrection. You can tell when you're in that third degree when you have confidence in your own being. You're not too easily shaken now by the world around you or the apparent disasters or things that threaten from time to time. You don't wake up with the dread of today or even the anxiety of what will today bring. You're waking up in omnipresence. You're going to sleep in omnipresence. And it is the omnipresent self that puts that physical form to sleep and wakes it up again. It is the omnipresent self that maintains its perfect spiritual integrity 24 hours a day without any human help. And it is that omnipresent self which you begin to know is your eternal life without beginning or end. Never born, never dying, and now you have left mother, father, brother, and sister, for they are yourself. If there is another on this earth who is not your invisible self, you have lost omnipresence. Wherever you go, your invisible self is all that is there. You are the one self of a one universe. And there was a time on this earth where the only self here that was realized was in Christ Jesus. There was no one else on the earth but his self. And every character in the Bible represents another facet of your human sense of self. Facets that have to slowly be dissolved. The Herods and the Caiaphases, even the James and the Johns, all must be slowly dissolved until all that stands in your universe is Christ, the living expression of God the Father. And it doesn't matter what form you see, that's what you're accepting because it is your invisible self. One undivided, invisible, spiritual self everywhere. This is omnipresence. And as you live in it, you'll find that your self, in any part of what we call this world, will never be harmful to yourself where your body stands. Yourself in any part of this world will gladly give its last dollar or its last ounce of breath to yourself here. Yourself everywhere will be in harmony with yourself where you stand. Nobody is external to yourself. When you have one self, you have eliminated all human differences and all human divisions and all human discords, because in your acceptance of them, you are denying the one invisible self that you are, that they are, and making your inner division, which translates into an outer division or discord. Omnipresence, I am. Because I and the Father are one. Now this is given to us by the Bible as the way to the release of divine oil to build that transitional body which walks through the fire untouched, comes out of the tomb of mortality, and ascends above every material limitation. In the present, in the now, in the here, and then all of the ecclesiastical promises about a heavenly hereafter no longer are the trap laid for the gullible. We learn God is active here and now, and that activity is the activity of my life. Now, the last veils, fear and doubt, should fall away. You should be able to look at all of the activities around you with a detachment. They may seem to endanger your possessions, your physical self, your future, but that is the belief of one who is separated from the real self of being, who has not yet found that soul center, but is living apart from it, and so accepts other powers than the omnipotence of the Spirit.